morning is Keenitz against Skani Nation. Mr. Peterson. I hope you're displaying that t-shirt under license from your client.
Since it's an infringing work, I don't need a license from the makers of the t-shirt, but Mr. Peterson has granted his authority. Good morning, Your Honors. Jim Peterson and my colleagues, Jennifer Greger, represent Michael Keenitz, who's also with us today. Mr. Keenitz is a photographer who created the photographic portrait of Mayor Paul Soglin, which is at issue in this case, which I'm holding up for you now. The defendants in this case copied Mr. Keenitz's photograph and reproduced it without authorization on this t-shirt, which I'm holding up for you now. The question is whether this is a fair use, and it is not. Mayor Soglin is fair game. You can mock him, criticize him, do whatever you like. But Mr. Keenitz's photograph is his property, and that is an infringing use.
One of the questions in this case is whether the t-shirt contains any of the copyrightable elements of the photograph. T-shirt strips out the background, posterizes the face, turns it green, well, yellowish green, and adds other stuff, and at least to an untutored eye like mine, all that seems to be left is Paul Soglin's face, and not actually very much of that either. It's a very different impression from the photograph, so the question is whether the copyrightable elements are in that t-shirt.
They are, Your Honor. There's no question that the photograph is a literal digital copy of Mr. Keenitz's work taken from the Internet.
They started with a digital copy of the photograph.
That is correct.
What's on that t-shirt is not a digital copy of the photograph.
It is with respect, it's a digital copy in modified form. There's no dispute that there's a modified form. But
if they started with a digital copy of the photograph, did all the things I've mentioned, and then supplied the face of Barack Obama, I take it that we would not be here.
I'm not sure I understand your question. If
they start with the official photograph of the mayor, they posterize it, right, removing all the contrast. They remove all the background. They turn the face yellow or green or yellow-green. Then they remove the face of Paul Soglin and stick in the face of Barack Obama. Would that violate the plaintiff's copyright?
No, it wouldn't. The expressive elements.
On this hypothetical, they started with his photograph, and then they made all those transformations. What interests me is why it matters that what's left is the face of Paul Soglin, which, if it belongs to anybody, belongs to Paul Soglin and not to Mr. Keenitz.
The expressive elements that are copied and preserved in the high contrast version relate to the capture of the momentary expression and the lighting that make this a particularly...
There isn't any lighting captured in that. The lighting has all been wiped out.
I disagree strongly, Your Honor. The reason this photograph works, Mr. Keene...
There's a tiny amount of shadow.
The reason
otherwise, it's all the same coloration.
The reason this photograph works in a high contrast version is that it has particularly directional lighting that, when converted to high contrast, preserves Mr. Soglin's expressive, his facial expression. It's a distinctive representation of Mr. Soglin. There is, the color is removed, but the lighting is the element that makes this work.
So, and I have a real-life example. Are you familiar with Andy Warhol's paintings of Marilyn Monroe, where there's a replication of her face in all different colors? And so you, would you say that wasn't fair use?
I don't know the status of the originals from Mr.
Yeah, assuming the original was taken by a photographer, and it's replicated.
And that it's under, it's protected by copyright. There is nothing incorrect about saying that Mr. Warhol's work is both a great work of art and an infringement of the author's copyright in the original photo. There's something self-defeating about the defendant's argument here, and that is this. They said that they needed a likeness of Paul Soglin. They went to the internet where they found hundreds, according to their papers in the district court, dozens in their brief in the appellate court, and they chose this one.
So I'm still stuck on, you know, and also looking at our case law on this whole question of fair use. Central to determining the purpose and character of the work is whether the new work merely supersedes the original work or instead adds something new with a further purpose or a different character, and whether the new work is transformative. And your position is it's not. The alterations that were made here were not significant enough.
I think it's more complicated than that. Whether the copy adds something new is an important consideration in the fair use analysis, but it is not enough that a copy adds something new, because under this circuit's case law, and in fact under Campbell versus Acuff Rose, all of the cases, a derivative work is within the purview of the author. A derivative work always adds something new, but it's still within the right of the author to control the creation of derivative works. So our complaint about the district court's analysis is that it adopted the Second Circuit approach to analyzing fair use, where that is more or less the end of the inquiry. If the copy adds new expression, meaning, or message, more or less the analysis is done. And that's not sufficient under this court's precedent, which says that you may take no more of the original than is reasonably necessary to achieve a legitimate purpose. And in this case, we have pressed hard to say there is no reason at all why Mr. Keenitz's photograph had to be used here. And on the defendant's brief, at page 28 to 29, there is the single paragraph where they address the question of whether they had a need to take Mr. Keenitz's photograph. And their answer, I think, is really very, very telling. Their answer is that our purpose was to mock the mayor. We needed a likeness of the mayor. We took Keenitz's because, given the practical realities of our small-scale operation, we had a short time frame and a limited budget. That is their explanation for why they took Mr. Keenitz's photograph. That is exactly the kind of freeloading that is decried in Campbell versus Acuff Rose. The reason Mr. Keenitz's photograph was useful to them is that it worked in the high contrast version that they were going to use. They did change it. There's no dispute about that. But they needed a representation of the mayor that would work on a t-shirt printed in high contrast form. And Mr. Keenitz's photograph serves particularly well because of the lighting that was available at the moment Mr. Keenitz chose to shoot that portrait of the mayor. If all that remains of Mr. Keenitz's photograph is Mr. Soglin's license, why didn't the defendants, in the year that they were contemplating making a t-shirt making fun of the mayor and his relationship to the block party, why didn't they just go to a public event and take a snapshot of him? Mr. Soglin is no hermit. He's in public all the time. And if it would be a simple matter to just show up and take a picture, regardless of when, regardless of the moment that was selected, then they could have easily done this. And there's, again, no justification whatsoever for taking Mr. Keenitz's work. Mr. Keenitz's portrait is a particularly good portrait of the mayor, and the lighting and his facial expression is what make that useful for the defendants. So, although it's changed, it does preserve those expressive qualities. there are not very many other photos that would work as well as Mr. Keenis's did in this particular application. And there's no excuse offered by the defendants as to why they didn't go and take their own. Or why they didn't license another one. They said there were dozens available on the Internet. They said they couldn't afford it, but they made no effort. The central issue, I think, that the court has to address in this case is whether the transformative use analysis of the style used in the Carrieu case and adopted by the district court and embraced by Scani in this case is an adequate analysis. We think that really has two main problems. If the court begins and ends with the question of whether the changes in the original are enough, the court will not be able to distinguish between an infringing derivative work and a transformative fair use. And this court in the Thai versus Publications International case and in the Chicago Board of Education case has recognized the importance.
What is the theory about how this T-shirt hurt Keenitz's business?
Mr. Keenitz derives revenue from licensing his photographs. He's a professional photographer. He's got a long-established track record of licensing his photographs and deriving income. He did not lose sales as a result of this T-shirt, but that's not the analysis. In Campbell versus Acuff Rose,
could you just explain what your theory of injury is?
The theory of injury is that Mr. Keenitz has the right to the exclusive right to authorize.
I'm not interested in arguments about what rights he has. Just tell me your theory about how he is injured.
He is injured because he has the right to say no to the creation of a particular
derivative. It doesn't sound like an injury. Is he contending, for example, that if he can't say no to things like this, he will have difficulty getting other clients, or he will have to sell his work for a lower price?
Speaking more broadly, the erosion
of
his...
Is he contending that, or is he not contending that?
Yes, he is contending that when...
I looked for that argument in your brief and didn't find it. Could you tell me where it is in your brief?
It is in the analysis that says two things. One, he is injured by the fact that he may lose licenses that may not appear for years.
Could you answer my question, please? Could you tell me where it is in your brief?
It is in the section in which we address the factor of market harm. And it's page 35 of our opening brief.
Okay, thank you.
But we concede that it is not the same as a lost profits analysis that we can point to opportunities that he will lose. Second problem with the district court's analysis is that the author has the right to say no. And if the author declines to enter a particular market, it doesn't necessarily follow that he doesn't suffer market.
I certainly don't see any such argument at page 35 of the brief.
In that section, we're arguing that he has the right to say no and that the value of his work as a whole is eroded when people make unauthorized uses of it. The Supreme Court in the Campbell case says the question on market harm is whether, if the defendant's conduct were to become widespread, would it usurp the market for the original or for derivatives of the original? And the district court, following the Carrieu style analysis, said there can be no harm to the original because no one could accept the T-shirt as a substitute for the original photograph. And while that's certainly true, it really ignores the question of whether Mr. Keenitz has a market for derivative works which belongs to him and him alone. And just like J.D. Salinger has the right to say, no, he will not authorize anyone to write a sequel to Catcher in the Rye, even though the sequel market is one that he has disavowed and therefore could never lose any money as a result of the sequel. He has the right to say no. And it has to do with the peculiar nature of copyrighted works. Some copyrighted works actually sell more if they're infringed. And we recognize, for example, that radio airplay increases sales of recorded music. But we also recognize that radio airplay is an infringement of the underlying right of the songwriter. Same thing with narrative art. Often the preparation of a sequel or another version would actually increase sales of the original work, but we consider that that belongs exclusively to the author. And the author may decline to enter that market, and that is part of the authority that he has over his work. I'll reserve the rest of my time for rebuttal and respond to any arguments or further questions.
Certainly, Mr. Peterson. Mr. Settle.
May it please the court. Judge Easterbrook, your first question really nailed the, hit the nail on the head in this case in terms of the central issue, and that is the very narrow scope of original expression protected under the Copyright Act by photographs such as the one at issue in this case. What this court said in Schrock in 2009 was...
Don't talk about what we said. We already know that.
Okay, so
I'd like you to address what Mr. Peterson said.
Sure.
He identified the part of Keenitz's contribution that survives as the lighting, which influences the way the picture works when you posterize it.
Okay, so if you want to, in the opening appellant's brief at page 7, they're side by side, or you can look at these images here. Basically, as the court noted, what the defendants did in this case was they started with a picture of the mayor from the website, but it's been totally degraded. And you can just compare the two. There's no skin tone gone. In the Leibovitz case, they talked...
I would really like it if you would address what Mr. Peterson said. He hung his case on the proposition that the original element left in the photograph is the lighting. That's what I'd like you to address.
Okay. So the lighting, the way the lighting plays out on a photograph is it casts shadow on the face, and you can see the subtlety of the shadow across the photograph of Mayor Soglin's portrait. All of that is gone. That's gone in the T-shirt. I mean, all you see is yellow and black. You know, there's no subtlety, there's no gradation in the shadow, and as the district court noted, it turns a flattering picture of the mayor, with rosy cheeks and skin tone and the image and the expression, into really a garish portrait that's more like a two-dimensional cartoon. But it's not only the lighting that's been stripped away, Your Honor. I mean, the tone is stripped away, the lines in the forehead creases around the eyes are gone, the expression in the eyes are gone, they're now black spots. Almost half of the mustache is now yellow. It's obscured because it's lighter. And then the mouth is obscured by shadow, too, so you can't even see the expression in its mouth. And so, as this court noted, through this process, what you have left is just the likeness of Mayor Soglin. It's no different than, any other image of Mayor Soglin, and his face is fair game.
That, of course, leads to the question, why, if it's no different from any other image of Mayor Soglin, you used a copyrighted image, your client used a copyrighted image, rather than going and taking a photo of Mayor Soglin?
Okay, well, the picture was on the City of Madison website. There was no copyright notice on the picture.
I understand the contention that people like to do the things that have the least effort associated with them. But one way, if any photo is as good as any other photo, one way to avoid copyright problems is to take your own, and then you're the copyright proprietor. The difficulty is that most of the time, a fair use argument for using a photo is going to be something like, we had to do it in order to mock the photographer. But there's no argument here that this is a comment on Keenitz or his skills as a photographer. The use of the photograph is simply to mock the mayor, and for that purpose, we all seem to agree any photo is as good as any other. So why would we say you're perfectly free to take the copyrighted photo?
Well, if you took your own photo, if you went to a press conference and took his photo in a suit at a podium, that could be an infringing work too if it bore a resemblance of Mr. Keenitz's photo.
I don't get it. If the proprietor of Scani Nation goes and takes his own photo, it's conceivable that something in the background might be copyrighted, but the photo will copyright will belong to the person who took it. And the background is, of course, stripped out.
I think the subject matter itself could be subject to a copyright infringement. Like
public officials do not have a copyright in their faces.
That's true. No, but my point is, like, you take a case like Leibovitz.
I wish you'd just deal with my question as I put it, rather than suggesting something
extraordinarily implausible. They could have taken a picture of their own. They could have taken another image from the internet. But the point is, any of the pictures they took.
It would be very foolish to take another picture from the internet. It might be copyrighted too.
But the point is, it's only infringement if what they've taken is expression that's protected by the copyright. And that goes back to the initial point made, that what they've done is they've just...
Are you familiar with the litigation about the Hope poster of President Obama used as part of his campaign?
Yes.
That seems very similar. This isn't the same quality as the Hope poster. But that lawsuit was brought, and before it settled, the district judge in that case said that the plaintiff was a surefire winner. Now, I don't see any material difference between what was done to produce the Hope poster and get the Obama campaign to pay what appeared to have been a substantial settlement to the photographer and what was done here.
Well, I think there are differences. I think one difference is that the whole point of this is it's not just the face. There's a political commentary.
That was the point of the Hope poster. That was the point of the word Hope.
You know, I'm not familiar enough with the facts about how similar the image was taken in the Hope case as opposed to the original photograph.
It was posterized. It was colorized. Much of the contrast was taken out. Well, if you're not familiar with it, there's no point in discussing it. But it was a very similar kind of transformation, although not done for the purpose of mocking Senator Obama, but for the purpose of promoting him. But an input into that work was a copyrighted photograph used without permission, and a district judge in the Second Circuit, whose law you're relying on, said it was an obvious case of copyright infringement. And then the case settled.
I mean, you know, and I think if you just go through the factors, we haven't talked very much about the factors, but I think the factors cut, as the district court found in this case, they cut in our favor. I mean, if you look at the purpose and character of the use, as Judge Williams noted, it's whether or not it adds something new with a further purpose or a different character, and we believe that we've done that in this case. It was degraded and it was used for political commentary to criticize the mayor's policies. But it's fundamentally different than the use on the website of the original portrait. And in terms of the amount and the substantiality of the portion used, we've talked about how there's, you know, as the district court found, that even in a side-by-side comparison, it's difficult to discern that the image in the T-shirt is an altered version of the Soglin portrait. And then the last issue, which is court asked questions about.
Can I just stop you there? This was a candid photo, right? The mayor didn't pose for it. He wasn't told. Wouldn't know where to stand or to make any effort to.
It's our understanding that this was a picture taken at the inaugural event, and so it was a candid photo. That's what the district court said, and in their appeal briefs, the appellant doesn't take issue with that. And so there, again, any lighting or expressive contribution by the you know, he was just in a room someplace when he took this photo. And then the last issue, I think, the last element, which I think is, you know, fundamental to this case, and there were questions asked before about the effect on the market. And again, you know, let me just cite two cases. The Brown Mark case from this court, 2012, said, quote, plaintiffs failed to give the district court or this court any concrete suggestion about potential evidence indicating that the South Park parody has cut into any real market for derivative uses of the original WWITB video. And that's 682 F3rd to 694. And in the Leibovitz case, in this case, Leibovitz has not identified any market for a derivative work that might be harmed by the Paramount ad. In these circumstances, the defendant had no obligation to present evidence showing lack of harm in a market for derivative works. And this factor is fundamentally important because what it goes to is the issue of you know, originality and market substitution. Here, these are just fundamentally different. The market that holds up the mayor as a, you know, revered figure, a person of rectitude, you know, as reflected in the portrait, and then the garish, cartoonish portrait in the T-shirt, which basically is used to portray him in a mocking fashion to criticize one of his policies with respect to his reversal of positions as to this local event. And so there's no usurpation of any market conceived. And as the Supreme Court noted in Harper and Roe, you know, this is that the fourth factor is the most important factor. And I think when the court looks at all the factors and applies the test, as the district court did, the court's judgment below should be affirmed.
Thank you, counsel. Mr. Peterson, anything further?
Just a couple of brief points. The photograph was candid in the sense that it was not taken in a portrait setting. It was at an event. But that
so
doesn't
it wasn't
mean
staged, or he didn't have lighting set up, or any of those elements which courts look to for purposes of originality.
It is true that he did not set up the lighting, but it is not true that courts do not look for the features that Mr. Keenan's photograph has. We recommend a case cited by the defendants, the Mannion versus.
No, I'm talking about the setup, because courts talk about the setup, staging, you know,
that
lights, all of that kind of thing, the backdrop, all that kind of thing.
That's right. That's right. And the background was intentionally shot in shallow focus by Mr. Keenan so that the background was, in fact, de-emphasized. That was one of his expressive choices. He made expressive selections not by posing the photograph, but by positioning himself and choosing the moment at which he would take this photograph that resulted in a portrait of the mayor that is, frankly, unlike the other dozen that they were able to find on the internet. So although it was a candid photograph, there are nevertheless many expressive choices, particularly the lighting, which I have emphasized, although I don't know that I've hung the whole case on that, but the lighting particularly. But the Mannion case also explains that there are expressive features in the timing. The last point I would simply make is that the Hope poster is a very good example, and that the transformation in the Hope poster is far more significant and sophisticated than the transformation that was wrought here, which was simply a quick Photoshop technique. If the court has no further questions, thank you very much.
Thank you very much. The case is taken under advisement.